we go. Okay, so Michelle, thank you so much for sitting down with me this morning. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what it is that you do?
Sure. Hi, Kelly. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. So currently, I'm the manager of global clinical and nosology content at Solventum Health Information Systems. So I'm realizing that that is quite a mouthful. That means that I work on the international content development inside our products and services here in HIS. And nosology is the branch of medical science that deals with classification of diseases. So fully classifying that medical condition requires knowing its cause, its effect on the body, symptoms it might produce, and other factors. I grew up in the northeast of the US and left the snow behind a few years ago, and now work in the Sunshine State of Florida.
That's amazing. So, thanks for unpacking what nosology is. I actually had to look that up. I was like, okay, so I know ology means the study of something. So I appreciate you unpacking that. A couple things. One, when you said you left the snow behind, so I'm guessing at one point in time you lived here in the wonderful white world of Canada.
I haven't, though my family did. We came down through Quebec into upstate New York into the US.
Nice. So and I'm going to circumvent a couple of my questions here because now you've piqued my interest. How are you associated with Chima then?
I work closely on the ICD-11 transition and planning through that organization. So, as part of international work, I got to know some of my colleagues there in Canada who are also working on this, mostly working for CIHI, and that is how this transition happened.
That is interesting. I love it when there's sort of a cross-border and a global perspective to the work that's done in healthcare because it can be so diversely different from, well, I mean, it can be diversely different from province to province and state to state, but
Yes.
I can imagine the difference between the countries. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like, have you noticed some drastic differences or does the ICD 11, does that sort of streamline things?
We hope that it will. It is WHO's goal that we can all move to ICD-11 and not have different clinical modifications of the classification for different countries. Because, as you imagine, a broken leg or a heart attack is the same whether you're in the Middle East on a paper record, or you're in a complex healthcare system in Germany, or you're in Canada or the US in a rural area. So the conditions are the same and the treatments are probably the same. But the regulations for how to handle that, documentation regulations, reimbursement and billing concerns, reporting concerns, those are all very different. Like you said, state to state, province to province, country to country. So while we're all basically, patients are having the same kind of conditions globally, and we're probably treating them similarly, the way we document bill, reimburse, all of that is very different.
What would you say would be the biggest standout difference that you've noticed, I guess, between Canada and the US in terms of the classification of diseases? Or is there
Well,
any?
yeah, there is. We have here in the US, we have a clinical modification ICD-10 CM that we use. Canada uses ICD-10 CA. They have their own clinical modification. So we have the same basic codes, but the way we apply them may be different. The way we use different pieces of evidence like labs or pathology to support those billing codes may be different. So some of the similarities, like if we talk about social determinants of health, those basic concepts that not everyone has the same basic ability, access to care, to fresh food, to fresh water, those codes set by WHO, say Z55 through 65, are the same between the countries, but the way we apply them and the rules that we have for documentation and billing and reimbursement of those are very different.
Fascinating. And you mentioned the WHO a couple of times, so I'm going to ask you a question on that. Is it the goal then that the classification of diseases specifically across the board is standardized? Is that the hope that
That
you
is,
know?
yes.
Okay. And that's amazing. That would be
Yes, that
amazing.
would,
I think it.
it would help us tremendously to report diseases, say, how many people have mortality because of this underlying cause of death, or how many people who have, I don't know, diabetes also have chronic heart failure, and just being able to get that information across the globe at the WHO level would be tremendous. Just reporting statistics, analysis, things like that.
Exactly. Back up a little bit. You know, you've had from what I've read, pretty much re a remarkable journey in healthcare, especially in healthcare technology. What inspired you to get into this field?
Yes, it really has been a remarkable journey. So after some time kind of growing up in data centers, working IT in different industries, telecommunication, manufacturing, and getting my master's in management information systems, I decided to move over to healthcare technology as an IT director. I found my work in healthcare so truly rewarding. It's shaped my personal purpose. I want to improve lives through technology. So I was promoted then to CIO and continued in the field. I pivoted from pure technology to healthcare-based work. When I did that, I started at a small woman-owned transcription company. That company was acquired by the technology provider at that time, who was then acquired by an even larger provider of speech recognition, clinical documentation technology, and transcription for healthcare providers. Then in 2019, there was another acquisition. This time was by 3M. So it was swallowed up, swallowed up, swallowed up. And earlier this year, 3M spun off its healthcare division into Solventum, a newly formed independent healthcare company. And that is where I am now. So yes, remarkable journey.
Absolutely. And I love the way that you said that you want to change the lives of people essentially through healthcare technology. What does that mean? First of all, that's an outstanding statement. What does that mean to you?
So any way that we can use technology to lean on to analyze that data, to have innovation in devices, medical devices, or just analyze things, looking at how disease progression or trending happens, all of that, any way that we can kind of look to the data to improve patients' outcomes, that is for me.
I love that. You mentioned so many different, like how you put it, it was each entity has been swallowed up and swallowed up and swallowed up. How has all of that, those experiences and each, sort of each iteration of the next phase, how has that shaped your leadership style and your approach to the role that you currently sit in?
So technology has really impacted the leadership styles and approaches. Like it impacts all of us. That rapid pace of change calls for leaders to shift, be transformational and wholly digital. Servant leadership has become more prevalent, and the unpredictability of change demands us to be adaptive and agile. That's why I obtained my Agile Scrum certifications along with my Lean Six Sigma black belt. My style is more of a hybrid, mostly servant leadership and some agile sprinkled in there, because I also lead a team of clinical coding developers. So that helps operationally, but mostly servant leadership has been my style.
I find that when anybody, I shouldn't say you specifically, but when anybody enters that healthcare space, servant leadership tends to be the leadership style of most people in healthcare. And I think that's because you're dealing with people, right? Like you're dealing with a service industry and then you're dealing with people. And even when you're dealing in the digital sphere, the background, the behind the scenes, you know that at the front end of that is a person, somebody's mom, somebody's dad, somebody's
Exactly.
aunt, right? And so the information that I think that you extrapolate or that you deal with has a profound effect on other people's lives. And I think that sometimes gets lost when you're dealing with data and from a person that's looking in, right? If I know that you're dealing with healthcare information, I'm being like, well, you're just dealing with information. But from the majority of the people that I spoke to, they've recognized that it's not just the data, right? This data impacts so many other facets.
I could not agree more, Kelly. I talk often about social determinants of health because we have a program here for that that I also lead. And every time I end those talks, it's please remember that each of these data points is a person or a group of people. Like it is about the people for me. And I think that's why I've stayed in healthcare technology. That's why it aligns with me. It motivates me. I'm very passionate about the work I do, because it affects people's lives.
And it's fascinating, and I can hear that passion in your voice. Again, just to go off topic just a little bit, every healthcare information management person that I've spoke to, they you all have that passion, which I don't think that again, the general public really understand because they hear the data piece, right? And so they gravitate towards that, but there's so much more to it. And I love to hear, and I love talking to all of you in this field because that passion does come through and it rings through very loud and clear. So thank you for that.
Yes, definitely. I not saying I didn't enjoy my previous roles in other industries, but I didn't get this excited about telecommunications or manufacturing steel or air conditioning. This is my thing, yes.
That's great. So, I mean, you've been, working with the data, it looks like for a fairly long time. How have you, it's now in the healthcare realm, how have you seen the industry evolve and morph? And what do you think, is the most significant advancement to date? And where do you think that may lead in the future?
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack. Let's see. I've seen the move from paper to electronic here in our complex healthcare environments of Canada and US. I continue to work in other areas where they've not completed that shift yet. They're still on paper. I've seen moves from green screen terminals, aging myself, to personal computers, to cloud computing here in North America, working with other countries who just aren't there yet. Some are, some aren't. We have security regulations. They vary from border to border, with overarching regulations like GDPR that they have in Europe. These shape that landscape globally. Again, I work on a social determinants of health program, and we work with healthcare systems and community care hubs to advance efforts with healthcare equity. I'm really thrilled to see significant advancements and regulatory, some of it now reimbursement related, the focus in this area. This is some of my most exciting work. And again, it's based in data, remembering, of course, that there's people. I'm hoping that this shift for the future is not an afterthought, not has to have a program around it. Let's just get everyone what they need to have the same basic access to services, no matter where they live or how they live.
I love that. I mean, Canada's kind of loosely based. I shouldn't say loosely based. We're based on a very socialist type of healthcare model. And, you know, my personal belief is that everybody has the right to healthcare. You know, I mean, there's a lot of beliefs that I can unpack behind that, but, you know, I had the opportunity, so I'm a nurse by background, and I had the opportunity to work in the US, oh, a few years ago. When I say a few years, probably a decade ago now. And there is such a difference between the Canadian and the American system, you know. And what I mean by that is not so much the system itself, but the perception from people. Like, I here in Canada, if I you know, need to go to the doctor, I go to the doctor, and I don't worry about how am I going to pay for it. And there's such a difference, you know, between myself, and I have friends that live in the US who, you know, when I'm like, you should just go to the doctor for that. And they're like, well, you know, and I feel like there shouldn't be that over, like, you shouldn't have to worry about, you know, your access to medical things, you know, like, you need that. But that's a whole different story. But I can definitely understand, and I can see how that would be a passion project for you. You mentioned community hubs, and I've written that down. That's intriguing me. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so a community care hub would be something offered like a I don't know, a food bank or a shelter. So working with organizations that provide those kind of services, nonprofits, and connecting people who may come through the healthcare system and then, you know, are discharged. Say someone who is homeless, they don't have a regular doctor, so they'll come in through the ED and be treated at some point. This is they're discharged, they're released, but they still have those conditions that led them to that admission. So they're still hungry, they still don't have a home to live in, they don't have shelter. So we try to connect the health systems. You know, okay, I'm going to discharge you, Mr. Jones. I know you have nowhere to go. I know you're going to go back and live like you were living because your conditions haven't changed in the 3 days you've been here. But there are these shelters in the area. Let me call them and see if they have availability. Or, you know, here, I know you don't have access to food regularly. Here's a food bank.
Oh, I see. So it's the way that I'm envisioning it. It's almost like working like a care coordinator for individuals to access those pieces that they may need once they're discharged. Got it. Got it. That's fascinating, actually. That's love that. That tickles me pink, actually, because you know, many times people drop off. Or not drop off. I mean, how can I word this? Many times, especially in the hospital, you focus on, okay, you came in for this broken leg, we're done, we fixed you, see you later. And there isn't
Correct.
that safety net of,
The
well, the person is,
holistic view.
yes, absolutely. So that is that. I'm glad that that is something that exists. And you know, it's definitely something that is that's needed for our population. You know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is I noticed that you speak at industry events, and you've written several articles. What message or insights do you hope to impart upon your audience through these platforms? Like, what's the main thing that you want people to understand? Or to walk away with after they've either read something that you've written or listened to one of your talks.
Yes. So my messaging is really about education and awareness. Really, it's focused on that. So when I speak about ICD-11, those events and articles, I hope to inform my audiences about the change from ICD-10 to 11. talk about the benefits of that new classification, where various regions are with their implementations, and what kind of lessons learned do we have from them? How awareness can help get you ready for the transition, and also jokingly tell them that retirement is not the option. when I speak about SGOH, those articles and events, my messaging is really focused on helping those health systems advance their hospital equity goals, improving patient outcomes overall, and then also responding to external reporting and accreditation requirements. So we have changing a regulatory environment, very dynamic. You must code this when you code that. We would like you to send in reporting to the government about anything related to SGOH, which how many patients are coming through with different needs? What are those needs? What are you doing about them? So this is an expanding area. So just trying to get everyone ready, keep everyone up on the latest. So again, messaging is truly education and awareness focused.
I love it. Now you've mentioned this a couple times, and I'm trying to unpack it, but I'm just going to ask, what is SDOH?
Oh, sorry. It's social determinants of health.
Oh, got it. Okay.
I'm sorry. We're very acronym heavy here at Solventum, so I speak that way all the time. I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I'm a nurse by background, and we tend to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So I always ask because in my head it could be like I may be thinking, oh, it must be this, but I didn't want to not have that clarity.
Yes, of course.
You did mention the benefit between ICD-10 and ICD-11. What's the difference between the two right now?
Let's see. It incorporates ICD-11 incorporates not only the current medical science and enhanced clinical content. ICD-10 is about 30 years old. So it also has the latest knowledge in classification design. It has digital computing. They've given us digital tools with this. It's more advanced clinically and technologically.
Okay, perfect. I think one of the things that I've heard is that, and I don't know if I've heard this in one of the interviews that I've done or read this someplace, but is there, how do I put this? Okay, I'm just going to come right out and say it. AI is embedded in so many different things at the moment. Does ICD-11 have that? Like if I'm typing in, left lung carcinoma, or if I'm typing into the beginning of that, when you say it's digitalized, do you have that ability for it to pull up?
It does. The
Okay.
ICD-11 coding tool, as released by WHO, is a digital browser kind of tool.
Okay.
So it does have predictive text. So if you start to type, DIAB, it will probably do predictive text and do diabetes for you, or diabetic. It will have that Google-like search ability in
Okay.
it.
Okay. So basically it enhances what it is that you do on the back end.
Yes.
Perfect. Tell me about the 90-day mentoring program that you do for the Women's Leadership Forum. Tell me a little bit about that, and then what impact have you seen that it has on the participants and then the organization in and of itself?
You're picking at all my passion projects. Thank you. So,
Thank you.
mentoring fellow women is another highly rewarding experience for me. So, I do mentoring informally. This program is a formal program where we take our mentees, match them with a mentor who is significantly higher than them in the organization, but someone they would not have access to day to day. It's not their boss's boss's boss. It's someone who works in another division, another group, who has nothing functionally to do with this person. So they get another perspective from another area of the organization. They get a different culture sometimes. We may match someone up who is more administrative with someone who's a leader in manufacturing. So we try to cross over those borders that someone wouldn't have access to this other mentor normally. Our program's top impacts are expanding their network, developing other skills, getting clarity on career plans and promotions. We've measured some of those impacts, and our metrics are really amazing. After the close of the last formal 90-day program, two-thirds of the mentees remained connected to their mentors. So there is a lasting relationship there. And a whopping 100% of our mentees would recommend the program to others. So that is so rewarding to me.
What I love that I'm picking out your passion projects. My passion project is in interviewing people, listening to people's stories. So maybe that's why I gravitate towards the passion. But I happen to think that we're more than just the titles that we hold. And so I do love to get to, the core of what drives people, and especially what drives people in their industry. And I love the fact that you have a mentoring program, especially for women. I think, we as women sort of have to sort of carve our own niches. And when you have somebody else that you can work with or that you can learn from that's also female, I think it's beneficial because you know the questions to ask. And not only do you know the questions to ask, but you see somebody doing something that you may want to do as well. And the value behind that is so rewarding. So I commend you on having that sort of program.
Yes, thank you. Yes, we've experienced the same invisible barriers. We have the same kind of culture whereby, we have a job application and we meet four of the five requirements. We won't apply. Someone else, non-female, will see one and they maybe have it and they will apply. Things like this, just cultural gender role norms. We all have that same experience, that same thought process. So helping us, remove these barriers, invisible barriers, is something I'm passionate about.
And you know what, that comes through very loud and clear. I mean, from the fact that you speak very passionately about social determinants of health, to the community hubs, to the mentorship program, it appears to me that your passion really lies in that people aspect and ensuring that people get what they need to succeed.
Yes.
Whether that's in their career or whether that's in being successful after they're discharged or whatever that piece is, it seems to me that for you that is the passion piece, and that translates over to the information piece, right? If you can see that on the front end, that on the back end with all the data will definitely come through.
Yes, definitely. Lifting others is what I am all about, whether it's front end, speaking to someone, improving data, improving outcomes, however I can do that. That is what I'm about.
I love it. My last question, tell me a little bit about Solventum Health. What is their mission? What are their values? And what, I mean, I know it's sort of through all the different iterations, this is where it's landed, and this is the new sort of health information system that sort of was birthed out of, a lot of background. Tell me a little bit about Solventum and how it aligns with your own values and beliefs.
Yes, so like I mentioned, it's a newly formed independent healthcare company, formed from 3M Healthcare. We're right now working because it's newly stood up 2 months ago. We're working on branding and As our company is focused on enabling better, smarter, safer healthcare to improve lives, this is our new branding. We're working on that, getting all of our marketing updated, our websites updated. You know, as you would imagine, this is a huge goal, a huge to do. So we are the employees. We're called solvers. We never stop solving for you is our mission. Do you have other questions about that?
No, that's perfect. And I love, and I think that's a perfect place to end with the fact that you're all called solvers and we never stop solving for you. I love that. And I think that, I think that really speaks to me just from a person standing here, maybe going to a website and seeing that, that speaks volumes. I don't have any other. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I have one little thing to add. I'm sorry, I should have
Yes,
mentioned this.
no. Go ahead.
Solventum was formed by the word solve and momentum. So that's how we got
Ah.
Solventum. We're solving with momentum.
I love that. That is amazing. Michelle, I wish I could sit and chat with you for hours and hours, but we both have busy lives.
Yes, ma'am. Likewise.
Yeah, but it was a pleasure meeting you and talking with you today. And thank you for telling me a little bit about your story and how you ended up with Chima and where you're going. That's exciting. And I hope that we have an opportunity to sit and chat again.
Likewise, Kelly. It was a pleasure meeting you and speaking with you today. Reach out anytime.
Thank
Have a
you so
wonderful
much.
day. Thank you,
You
Kelly.
too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.